You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
When Charles Lane's silent black-and-white film Sidewalk Stories was shown at the Cannes Film Festival in 1989, it won the Prix du Public, received a 15-minute standing ovation, and was praised by Roger Ebert and many other critics. But since then, it has been largely forgotten. The film was shot on the streets of Lower Manhattan and tells the story of an African-American street artist trying to get by, but it was never released on video or DVD and hasn't been seen in over 20 years. That's about to change because Sidewalk Stories was recently restored from its original negatives and it opens tomorrow at Film Forum. And I'm very pleased that it brings Charles Lane, who wrote, directed, and starred in the film, to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you, sir. How are you?
I'm okay. What was it like to revisit this film after so many years?
Well, it was very cool. I mean, mind you, over the years, I've screened it for people on bootleg DVD that we had. And so I was, kept abreast of the movie. But the fact that it's restored and that it looks brilliant and sounds brilliant is eye-opening.
We should point out that when you say it sounds brilliant, that's the music, because this is a silent film.
Yes.
And it takes place in a very different Greenwich Village than the one we know now. What was the village like when you were shooting this film?
Well, for starters, the IFC Theater was called the Waverly. I used to go there quite a bit because the Midnight Show used to be, and maybe still is, the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Mm. So I've been to Waverly Theater, one screen, not 24 screens. It's a different Greenwich Village. And the park, the area in which we shot the movie, is now, I wouldn't say cluttered, but there's a nice garden there. And when we shot it back in 1989, it was an open space. Mind you, just a few ground rules I want to establish. There's no profanity on radio. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Is Leonard your real name?
Yes.
Okay. What else do I have? Oh, I want to give a shout-out to my good friends, to Michael Baskin, to Vandy, to Amy, and to my wife, Laura.
Charles, this is the first time anyone has ever given a shout-out on a show. You want to say hi, Mom, too?
Yes, hi, Mom. Hi, Dad.
You said
hi, Julian. Sorry.
What about your daughter who appears in this film?
Hi, Nikki.
Now that must be really interesting for her to see because she was quite young at the time.
Yeah, she was 2 years old. Yeah, yeah.
Can you direct a two-year-old?
You can, as long as they don't think that you're directing them. As long as here's the deal. With her at 2 years old, she wasn't very precocious. She's a well-mannered little girl. But the thing is to keep it fun, to keep it a game. So how do you teach a two-year-old not to look into the camera? Well, what we did, for about a month going in, we had a 16-millimeter camera on a tripod there right next to her crib. And so she would see it until she got bored with it. So when we went on set, there's a camera a little larger, 35-millimeter, but it didn't interest her, and that was the key. And everything else basically was a game. We solicited tears from her. That was easy enough to do, again, being a silent film, because my daughter, Nicole, hated, I don't know if many two-year-olds feel this way, but she hated to hear the words, "It's time to take a nap." It's time to take a nap.
That's like, what you said.
Yeah, I'm in the bottom of the taxi cab, and she needed to cry for the scene because she was being kidnapped. And I said, "Nikki, it's time for you to take a nap." And she says, "No, but I'm not tired. I don't want to take a nap." The tears are flowing, right? Very cool, and I got the effect, the desired effect, because it was time for her to take a nap.
You said that you were inspired to make this film after a conversation with a homeless man on the subway.
Correct.
How did that conversation start?
Well, I was watching a boxing match back in the day, 1988, I think. 88, yes, indeed. Right before I wrote the script. And I was with my friend Michael Baskin again. Hi, Jan Leader. Sugar Ray Leonard was fighting Donnie Lalonde, a light heavyweight championship fight. And Sugar Ray Leonard's much smaller, was formerly a welterweight, up to middleweight, and so on. So up in, but he won the fight, and I was so thrilled. This is back in, I think, November of 1988. So I'm coming home from the Bronx, going back down to Manhattan, where I used to live with my wife, ex-wife, and my kids. One kid, Nikki, she was 2 years old. And I have a son who's now 20-something years old, 22 years old, but he wasn't born yet.
But Nikki must be amused when she sees herself in this movie.
She's amused in a distant way. She is not into film like that. She doesn't put down acting, but you know, she was 2 years old, and she's a brain child. She's at Yeshiva University now. She's studying, getting her PhD in child psychology. Film is something in the past for her film, and she's not very a big fan of it per se.
Well, it shows her crying, among other things. So you're on the subway going from the Bronx to the Village.
Yes, and this homeless guy on the subway, he moves closer to me, and I'm thinking, okay, I know what's coming. We all know what's coming. It's going to put the pinch on me. And he comes up to me and he says to, excuse me, do you mind if I ask you a question? I said, yeah, sure, because I know what the question was going to be. And he said, who won the fight? And that just blew me away. You know, like, who won the fight? What a question to ask me. And so we started talking about the fight, and I was telling him about Sugar Ray Leonard and how wonderful it was. And then he never asked me for money, and I gave him, I only had a few dollars in my pocket. I gave him like half of what I had, something like that. And then I was walking home. I got to 14th Street. I used to live on Christopher. Got to 14th Street, and there are people on the bench, very cold, as I said, like November. And I'm thinking, some of these people are not going to make it to the next year, you know. So I'm just thinking, no film in my head. And then on Christopher Street itself, Christopher Street proper, I'm walking and there's this cardboard box and it just shimmies to the side. And I like kind of jumped because I didn't know it was animated. And then I see 2 feet underneath and I'm like, whoa, lucky me. I'm going to a home. I'm going to my daughter and my wife and a roof over my head. And these people, wow, you know, and that was kind of the genesis of the movie.
Well, there's still a lot of homeless people in New York, but it was much more apparent in those days. Regularly saw people sleeping in doorways under cardboard boxes and such. The plot of Sidewalk Stories is similar to Charlie Chaplin's film, The Kid, which he also wrote, directed, and starred in. Did you want to play homage to Chaplin's film?
Yeah, to some degree. I mean, here's the thing. It's highly influenced by The Kid, yes, and Chaplin in general, Buster Keaton and Hal Lloyd, because as a student, you must acknowledge, even more than acknowledge, you have to first bow, cross your fingers, and hope you can do it. Making a silent film in any year, certainly in 1989, was a big risk. I knew that, but I also knew if I did it well, a little bit more than halfway well, the dividends might be long-lasting.
Well, Black and White Silent.
Oh, Black and White.
And there has been a big, successful Black and White Silent film more recently. Maybe you were just ahead of your time? Because the artist became, well, it won an Academy Award.
Yeah, it was several. And he owes me money. He stole from me. No, I'm playing. He's influenced by the great masters as well. And, you know, there are a few parallels in the artist to Sidewalk Stories, granted. But, yeah, you have to study. You have to know that. And what I did in Sidewalk, by the way, is not use intertitles, right? Silent films, 99% of them, if not more, they depended on intertitles. You had to read what the actors and actresses were saying.
And you just wanted to tell a story through the visuals.
Yeah, but it was also a challenge because I'm doing something new. I thought new and old in 1989. So why don't I challenge myself and not use titles? Nothing to read. In Poland, it'll say the same thing. You don't have to translate anything.
My guest is Charles Lane, whose Sidewalk Stories is being revived after how many years? 1989?
24.
It opens tomorrow at the Film Forum on West Houston Street in the Village. And I read that you shot the entire film in 15 days.
15
you obviously
and a half
were
days.
Working on a tight budget. Were you helped by the fact that you were doing a silent film in black and white?
I was helped a lot by it and hindered a little bit. I mean, people were laughing at me all the time, and not comedically, just like, what do you think you're doing? We had the Teamsters protest us for a while because we didn't engage them in our process of making the movie. So they actually, and there's one moment in the film you can see them, they're actually like picketing, Charles Lane is unfair, Sidewalk Stories is unfair, and they're yelling stuff out to mess up our sound. There was no sound. There was no sound. One gag I wanted to put into the movie, which I didn't, was to have a microphone, a boom microphone, come into the top of the frame, you know, as if, you know, like a mistake because there's no
private
sound.
Joke.
Yeah, private joke, yeah. So that never happened. But the Teamsters protesting, that was funny because it didn't affect us. And then we did engage them for the last 5 days, I think, of shooting. And, you know, they were on the payroll, the limited payroll, but they were happy.
In his review of your film in 1990, Roger Ebert wrote, "In a sound film, the characters usually represent themselves. In a silent film, they represent a type. They stand for others like themselves." Was that your intention?
Yes and no. One hopes when you make a movie, I guess any film, that the characters individually will represent themselves, not a type. And then, you know, if you're lucky, they can represent a type, which means a more universal, background and such like that. But yeah, I wanted both things. Making the film, I was greedy. I wanted the film to have legs. I wanted it to last forever. So far, 24 years is not bad.
Well, it's about things that still exist.
Yes.
Artists, rich, the poor, the haves, the have-nots.
Correct.
But the plot itself, which involves your character suddenly being having to take care of a very young girl after he sees her father get murdered.
Correct.
That doesn't happen all that often.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. But homelessness, unfortunately, is, again, I say unfortunately, is forever. You know, I don't see the world becoming a panacea where everyone has a home, where everyone has a roof over their head, or four square meals, or two square meals a day. So that's going to live with us for a long time. And I wanted to speak on that. It was risky making a comedy which involved homelessness. I knew that going in. But again, I knew that if I could do it with some dignity and some class, it would be okay.
Now, you were talking during the shooting, obviously. Can you imagine this film with sound?
Sure. It wouldn't be the same film, but here's a quick story for you. Back in 1990, Disney, whom I worked for, and right after I made a film called True Identity, Disney wanted to buy the rights to Sidewalk Stories, and they wanted to remake it as a sound film, of course, color and so on. And Tom Hanks, not dropping any names, he was a guy that they wanted to play me. Hello. Hi, Tom. And Tom and I, you know, we met each other because he said, and I kind of quote here, "Thank you, but I have to pass on this. There's nothing that I can do better than Mr. Lane has done, but I would really love to meet the man behind this film. Please help that happen." And so we met, he and I, and so on. But yeah, they wanted to make it a sound film.
Now, what are the circumstances for having it restored and then re-released?
Circumstances. Vincent Paul Boncour in France, Carlotta Films, they had the rights, I believe, since 2002, perhaps, something like that. And they were doing it in the French-speaking territories, you know, France, Luxembourg, Belgium, and Switzerland. And they were doing it and, you know, making a little bit of coin on it, you know, nothing embarrassing. And they lost the rights. And my partner and I, my lawyer, ex-lawyer Howard Brickner, who's the producer of the film, and it all hats off to him. He financed it. The rights reverted to us. And that was in 2010. I thought it was going to be 2014. I get a call from Carlotta. "Do I know who have the rights?" I said, "Yeah, MGM." "No, we talked to MGM, who we were dealing with. They don't own the rights anymore. Do you know who does?" I said, "I don't know. I can't help you." "Well, let me try to help you." So I call. I find out MGM doesn't own the rights, but we do. And so it
came as a surprise.
A big surprise, because I was thinking next year. So, you know, we made a deal to re-release the film. But I said I didn't want it to be the French-speaking territories. What I needed to have happen was that the film would be internationally exposed again, theatrically first, and thank you very much, DVDs and Blu-ray and VOD, please. And he said, "Absolutely. How about we restore the film too?" And I said, "Oh, I didn't think of that. Great."
Were the negatives in good shape?
Negatives was in pristine shape. Absolutely. Oh. Yeah, so we were good to go.
Well, people will have an opportunity to see it starting tomorrow at Film Forum on West Houston Street. My great thanks to Charles Lane, who wrote, directed, starred in, co-produced Sidewalk Stories.
And co-edited. Thank you.